Thursday, May the 5th, 2005, we're at the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and welcome to all of you. We'd like to honor our veterans first today, as we always do, and you do come first. So if you have served our country, would you please stand or raise your arm?
Here.
We appreciate you very much. We're most grateful for your service.
Yeah. Here's 46.
Thank you. I have 46, but I don't have 60.
Dr. Stembridge, we have Deborah Buchanan here from Department of Revenue, and I'd like her to come first up, if you would, Deborah, please. And we need to talk about our favorite two books. Our taxes. Our favorite magazine.
We're not going to start out giggling.
Our income tax booklet.
And Madam Chair, did you want to open a work session on one of these bills that has to do with the charitable program, the 2847 or 3333 or 2737? Are the three bills that we have that relate to charitable checkoff, or you could just have an information section that it wouldn't be recorded as part of any of the bills' deliberations.
Okay, we'll just have an informational meeting if possible. Deborah, thank you very much. In talking about our desire to have to, you know, be seen on this list, one of the suggestions was that we rotate all of these nonprofit entities, and so it would be fair to all. And so, therefore, we in three of our bills then drafted bills that did that and eliminated the requirement for $50,000 of revenue coming in from refunds, and also provided for the Department of Revenue to rotate these entities. Is there a complication to that, or have we done that in the proper way?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, I'm just now looking at the -3 amendments to House Bill 2737.
I'd suggest you open a hearing work session.
Okay, if you'll hold just a minute then. I will now open a work session on House Bill 2737. And if you'll all give us just one moment, please.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2737 is the one that would create an Oregon Military Family Relief Program within the military department, and it funds the program entirely through the charitable checkoff program. We've got partway through the -2s yesterday, and I see that today we have -3s, and I believe that's what Ms. Buchanan is going to talk about.
I do not have a -3. I don't believe. Let me check.
It might be in your fresh
file. No, I have a
today.
2 and a 1. Oh, in our new stack?
Yeah.
Our new-to-you stack. Okay, it is indeed. I need to look under amendments I have not seen. Okay, well, we are just looking at it with at the same time you are.
Okay.
You know the date on the amendments, so it's these are pretty fresh.
As in today. Thank you very much. I really do want to thank Dr. Stembridge and Aaron Seiler for their excellence. They're the best, and we are fortunate to have you.
Madam Chair, on this particular one, it was Representative Barnhart who, during your meeting yesterday, had his staff request these amendments. And I think also we should be grateful to Legislative Council for turning these around so quickly.
Legislative Council gets an A-plus today.
Right. We're on 2737.
We are. Representative Barnhart. And this is Deborah Buchanan from the Department of Revenue, who assisted us to begin with. And I was explaining to her that we have drafted three bills, and in our bills, we have deleted the $50,000 requirement for revenue, as well as determined it would be really equitable if we had a rotation of all the many nonprofit organizations. Okay, we're all just looking at the dash three at this moment.
May I make a comment about the dash three? A couple of, if I may.
Yes, sure.
Thank you. The issue that the chair raised yesterday about other dependents, it was actually dealt with in that amendment and also again in this one by B on the bottom, on page 1, line 24.
Page where?
Page 1, line 24 of the dash 3 amendments, and line 1, page 2 of the same amendment, where we say recognized in regulations regarding the military department as a dependent of a person described in subsection 1A or B of the section. We had testimony from Colonel Caldwell that those regulations included the other classes of people that we were talking about for dependents. So if we'd left that out, we'd have been in trouble, but having it in covers the things that the people at the chair was concerned about.
So if a veteran is looking after his aged mother and responsible for her, this will now take care of her.
Right, and I'm getting a nod from the colonel in the back.
Okay.
He knows the regulations and I don't.
Okay.
Now, this particular bill does not include the $50,000 repeal piece.
Colonel Caldwell, could you join Deborah, please?
But I think we've very fairly raised the issue for the Revenue Committee, and they can make sure that whatever the final bills are that come out contain the language that gets the job done, since we've given it to them in the other bills.
Okay, so welcome, Colonel Caldwell. Do you have a copy of this bill and the dash three we're just now receiving?
I'm going to share that with my esteemed colleague from the Department of Revenue here. And what was the primary change different?
What is said here is that the entities are equivalent options on the face of the income tax form. Of course, you know, our dream is for all of the nonprofits who have made this booklet, our favorite reading material, to have them all listed. And, of course, if the Department of Revenue should come up with a way to list them all, that's our favorite of all favorites. And so we're all equal in the eyes of the taxpayer. I think that would be the most fair. And I think it's then appropriate to keep them in the order in which legislation was passed and they were, you know, put on the booklet. Is there any way possible that can happen, Deborah?
Yeah. Madam Chair, it would not be possible for us to put on the tax return itself all of the entities.
Would you speak into that microphone?
I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
It would be very difficult for us to put all of the entities that are now on the form or in the instructions on the form itself. I believe there are 17 entities now that qualify. So without going to a two-page tax return, that would be very difficult for us to do. In looking at these amendments, and you've pointed out the words equivalent option, I'm taking that to mean that none of them are given any particular preference as to ordering or bolding of the font or dollar amounts that could be contributed to those entities. It appears to me in reading this that the language picks up all of those that are now in the instructions and all of those that are required by statute to appear on the form itself. So I take this to mean that any entity that applies to the Charitable Checkoff Commission for inclusion in the tax instructions as qualifying for a charitable checkoff would be put into a pool. And then there would be a selection of entities that would show up on the return itself, and that appears to be determined by the department in lines 17 through 19. So it appears to me that the department is given authority to determine how much space there is on the return for listing of entities. We would then, if there's room for four, we would come up with a system to select four that would go on the return itself, and the others would be in the instructions. The dollar amounts appear to be excluded or eliminated, I should say, by the amendments on page 3, lines 3 through 5. So we would not be required to show dollar amounts, but instead would have a blank for the taxpayer to write in the amount of their contribution.
And was there any other requirement for the first three, the Oregon non-game wildlife and the child abuse prevention and the Alzheimer's disease research? Were there any other requirements for those three?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that they are required in statute to be listed on the form, and there is no other requirement that applies to those three.
Okay.
I believe the $50,000 applies to the other two that are on the form now.
The Stop Domestic and Sexual Violence and the AIDS HIV Education and Services.
I believe so.
Okay.
And then after, I think it was in the 99 session, that the $1 million gross revenue and the $10,000 registered voter signature requirements came in to allow entities to be listed in the instructions themselves.
Okay. Does that take care of our question from yesterday? Any other questions?
Yeah,
Representative Bernhardt.
Just one, Madam Chair. Does the word "a system for rotating eligible entities" limit in any way the authority of the department, in your view? I'm looking at lines 18 and 19.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I'm sorry, this is my first chance to see these words, so I'm just still a little bit cold this morning. I think it's all right. It seems to me that by rule we could establish a system for rotating them for inclusion. I'm not sure why it says either on the tax form or in the instructions, because it seems that you would select them to go onto the form, and those that aren't selected would by default be in the instructions.
And you could certainly interpret this language to mean that, couldn't you?
That's how I would interpret
it.
One question that does, I am not clear as to the intent behind the language on lines 21 and 22. Is it the intention that an entity for the first year that it's eligible would have to be in the instructions, and for the second year that it's eligible, it has to be in the instructions, and it's only in the third year that it goes into a pool where it could be selected to be on the form? That appears to be the case in reading this, but I'm not sure why.
What lines are you on?
She's looking at lines 21 and 22.
Third year.
One page.
Yes. Yes is the answer.
Then, Madam Chair, the way I would read this is that all entities that are appearing either on the return now or in the instructions would be eligible for selection to show up on the form. If an entity applies this year and is eligible, it would go into the instructions next year and the following year, and the third year it would join those other entities and be eligible to be drawn for appearance on the form itself.
That appears to me how it's written. I'm not sure I agree with it, but that's how it's written.
Madam Chair, my question then would be, I think you have an entity that you want to appear. This the original bill requires inclusion of
the Military Relief Fund?
Yes. As a charitable checkoff, so would that restriction apply to it as well, so that it would be listed in the instructions and then 3 years from now go into the pool?
I do not know why we got it to the third year. I don't know why.
Mr. Simmers, is this the same language as in the other bills or not?
It is in, Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, it is in 2847.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it is in
House Bill 3333.
Well, my thank you, Deborah, for bringing this up. My vote is to remove those two lines. I don't think there's any reason to wait 3 years to be in a rotation schedule for anybody. If they put the Oregon Humane Society in here this session, I think they ought to be as as well represented on the farm as any others. Representative Barnhart.
Another question for Jim, related to that, if I may. Dr. Stembridge, is given that this is going to another committee, could we do that by an amendment here, a deletion here? What do we call it? Conceptual amendment.
We don't need to go to another committee.
In my opinion, this would not affect any other provision.
It looks like
you could do a conceptual to
just to drop out B,
pull that out of there,
Mr. Stembridge, is the reason we have to go to another committee is because the Department of Revenue is going to charge us for adding those five words, and so that's why we have to go to the Revenue Department. Otherwise, there's no reason.
It's a taxation issue. Revenue covers.
Yeah.
Sure.
Representative Boquist, if you say something I like, I'll listen.
You're not going to like either one of these, Madam Chair, but I'll say it anyway.
Just kidding.
I know the referral to revenue is because the Department of Revenue falls under the Revenue Committee, and the second point is there are no less than, I think, four or five similar bills like this that I've already been tasked when they all arrive at revenue, which we're hoping to, they're going to arrive tonight, that we're going to roll into an ominous package, deconflict the whole thing, and try and make it go forward. And we've already, revenue, spoken with Deborah in the Department of Revenue about maximizing this six to something more like 8, 10, or 12 on the first sheet. So, but we've got to roll all these into one because there is a fiscal.
I asked her to put all of them in there and get rid of those dollar signs.
And there are several other things because the fiscal then, when you change the surface of the form, it's going to kind of be shared by a whole bunch of bills that are coming across the floor of the House. Because if you look at the fiscal actually redoing the form, so on and so forth, one has to remember any tax change we do that affects the form has to be redone. So it all has to be kind of coordinated in revenue so that the poor Department of Revenue can figure out just exactly which of the 6, 8, or 10, right, Deborah, that we're gonna implement.
Okay, I understand why it has to go to revenue, and I will trust Representative Kopp and Representative Boquist to
represent our interests.
Yes, representatives to represent our interests this time. That's for sure. Deborah, thank you so much. Colonel Caldwell, what is not in here is your, I guess, what do? Have administrative rules for how you're going to administer this fund? I don't see anything in here that other than says it will go into a fund. And if you already have procedures, for the sake of just knowledge, I would like to have a copy of them, how you determine who uses the fund and how it's handled.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Military Department. If you look at dash 3 and also on the dash 2, line 12, and it says line 17, delete rules
wait,
and insert.
Let me catch
in dash 3, line 12.
Dash 3, line 12.
It says in line 17, delete rules and insert regulations in the base bill, and that's, we'll adopt implementing regulations. Regulations implementing
in the body.
The distribution. It's in the body of the main bill, and this just changes the rules. We don't make rules, we make regulations. So it's
the only thing is rules for regulations.
So there is a standard set of regulations that we have right now that govern the relief fund that we currently operate, which is donated monies. It's not general fund tax monies or any other tax revenue. It's donated dollars from the communities and members and different people. So we have a set of rules that distribute how we distribute that right now. I'd be more than happy to get those and share them with you.
Okay, well, I saw in here where this goes into another fund that you have.
Madam Chair, the way I interpret it from the way I've read this bill is that it basically will be a new fund in our budget that is appropriated continuously based on how many dollars Department of Revenue says is in there. So it's a continuous appropriation, and it'll always show up in our budget line item based on the estimates that we'll have, and then we'll have authority to spend, in a sense, write a State of Oregon check instead of a private foundation check, which is what the way it's done now.
And the other issue that I'm greatly concerned about, not because y'all would do it, but because we read in the newspaper almost every day, it's my hope there is no fee or money taken out of here. I don't want us to be like Goodwill Industries, where, you know, the executive takes $560,000 right off the top of what they earn. It makes me crazy, and it's bad. And the workers don't even make minimum wage.
Madam Chair,
what would be the charge of the military for this?
Madam Chair, presently the current system that we run is basically done within our personnel system. So we don't charge off a fee for that. It's part of our part and parcel to our personnel system. But as I mentioned yesterday in the hearing and some other, I mean, this bill and others, we had the reserves. I have no visibility on that, and I don't know exactly what that's going to be. I suspect with the other bills that we've seen that have reserves in them where we have no visibility, we're going to have to develop a system. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's going to be free. I don't see how that can be, because I don't have any data on them. I don't know where they live. And we're going to have to set up some system that guarantees that they're, you know, that they are who they say they are, and their families are who they say they are. And since I can't access their databases, we've got to figure that out. And I don't know what that's going to be. I can't tell you it's going to be a half-time person, a quarter-time person, no-time person. Right now, it fits very nicely within our system because all the records are there. The same people do it. They get on the computer, and Joe Blow's wife needs XYZ. We got, boom, we plug in. We got them because we're right there. But I don't have that capability with them, with the different services. So that could be problematic. I just don't know what it'd be, and I'd be foolish to tell you that it's going to cost X, Y, or Z at this point. But we can report back and tell you that when we figure it out, too.
We would appreciate that very much.
And that'll be some time after this is instituted that we'll know that. And I suspect that the reserve components hopefully will come to us with either databases, you know, computer disks or something that says this is who our people are, take this disk at. And it should be fairly easy, I hope.
Well, if they want to participate in this,
I guess that's one way to get them.
I guess we need to make it clear, and I'll just make it clear right now that is the intent of this committee, that they, you know, support you and supply you the critical help and information you need to work this fund appropriately. Because we're very proud of them.
We would certainly encourage them to make it as seamless as possible, because any great administrative effort that has to happen, we're just not situated to do that. And so we would probably.
We have appreciation. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I think we're all aware that the Colonel squeezes every nickel twice before he spends it.
At least.
But in addition to that, someone who wants a loan or a grant presumably can be asked for the information that you need in order to process it.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct. And again, it goes back to eligibility. Typically, what we're dealing with are family members. Typically, if they're enrolled in the DEER system, which is Department of Defense wide, then if we can get access, I suspect we can. I just don't know that we can because we've not done that before. And if we can get access to DEERs to validate their enrollment, that their service member is indeed serving, and DEERs will tell us that, which is the national system. I just don't know that I can get access to somebody else's information inside DEERS. That's the piece that I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you could convert him.
Oh, I'd love to.
To the guide, Representative Bogvich.
Madam Chair, just to, I guess, clarify on the record for in military terms here so that we have it. I think it's the committee's intent that, you know, if there's a reserve soldier that has one of these issues, that their chain of command, whether it be the Marine Corps Reserve, the New York State of Oregon, the Air Reserve, or whatever, that chain of command is going to be responsible for validating the information and providing it to the Oregon Military Department. I mean, we're providing the opportunity, but it still is behooving on those military service chains of commands to validate and provide that information that is requested from the Oregon Military Department. We're providing the mechanism to help the individual soldier and the Oregonian, but it still falls to the chain of command in that military service that is outside of the purview of the Oregon Military Department to provide whatever information is necessary to support their soldiers so that the military department can help them.
Madam Chair, along those lines, I might just say that that's exactly how we do it right now with our chain of command. We make our chain of command validate the need. And it can be done with a phone call. Can be, you know, we don't require reams of paper or whatever. But if one of the unit chain of command members calls up and says, Joe Blow's wife is in trouble, needs X, Y, Z, that's verification enough, as long as chain of command knows about it. And that's how we validate now, and that's how we distribute the funds that we have.
Thank you. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know you're very excited to continue on that line of questioning, but I'll let you off Caldwell in terms of the implementation of the fund. I was looking back at the sheet, I think, that you had given us when we first had a hearing on this several weeks ago, that compares the current five that are listed on the floor with the other, I think it's 13 that are listed in the instructions. Is it a fair assumption that any one of those that's currently listed on the form, were it to be rotated off to the instructions, that the dollars contributed to that would probably drop off? It looks like 75% to 90%. Is that a fair assumption that would occur based on your history with the funds that are currently on the form itself and on the instructions?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, we have never had, to my knowledge, the experience of one that's been on the return having to come off. Mm-hmm. So that could be a fair assumption, or it could be that people are used to making a contribution to that organization and will look for it in the
instructions. Because they're well established. Some of them have been on before 1991, even, as I recall. So they are established, and we want them to continue to get support. I think what we'll get is a whole new group of people that have never, you know, determined they want to do something with a refund, and I think that's will generate a lot of interest. We may help every one of these, you know, by getting another group interested in it.
I'll follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Deborah, just to refresh my mind, which of the ones that are presently on the form are statutorily mandated right now?
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, the Oregon Non-Game Wildlife Fund, the Child Abuse Prevention Fund, the Alzheimer's Disease Research Fund are required in statute.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Hey, any other questions? Thank you both very much.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate it. And Mr. McDonald, since you're the head of this commission, do you need to speak to this issue?
I think you covered it.
Would you come forward then, because you just talked about it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. The Charitable Checkoff Fund has the figures we get is those actually on the tax form itself get a great deal more money than those that are not on the tax form. So if they rotate off, I expect that those will have a decrease in the amount of money coming in, and those going on the form, I expect will have an increase in the amount of money that's coming in. But I think it's.
But we don't know because we've never done it, right?
We don't know. But I think it the fairest way, and we've talked about this in the commission. That the fairest way would be to rotate all charitable organizations that are of the 18 of them. If we rotate them, you know, on and off each year, in alphabetical order or some order, so each one gets the same shot. Yeah, I think it's the fairest way to do it.
Thank you so much. Any questions for Mr. McDonald? Thank you very much. Now, Representative Barnhart, now what needs to go is...
Dash 3.
The dash 3 without lines 21 and 22.
Madam Chair, I move a conceptual amendment to the dash 3 amendment
that would remove lines 21 and 22 and remove the parenthesis in line 15.
Representative Barnhart has moved that...
On the second page, thank you. Yes, page 2.
That on page 2 of the dash 3, he's moved a conceptual amendment to delete lines 21 and 22, and on line 15 to delete the small a in brackets. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the conceptual amendment is accepted.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I move the dash 3s to House Bill 2737 as conceptually amended.
Representative Barnhart has moved the conceptual amendment to House Bill 2737 in the remaining portion of the dash 3 to House Bill 2737. Is there any discussion? Representative Hunt.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. For the same concern I raised yesterday, I think, having had the opportunity overnight to even look at the list further, I think what Mr. McDonald said is clear to me that any that we rotate off of child abuse prevention or stopping domestic and sexual violence or these other ones are just going to see a significant decrease in funds, and I just think that's a mistake. If there was a way to either replace some specifically that are on, or as Representative Boquist said, add some additional ones on the form, I'd be completely supportive of that, but just as a matter of principle, I can't support the rotation provision.
Okay. Any other discussion? I assume that was the objection.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Seeing a majority are in favor of the conceptual amendment in the dash 3, that amendment and the conceptual amendment have been approved, will be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I think we're ripe for a motion on the bill, and if that's the case, I would move House Bill 2737 as amended and as conceptually amended to the House Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 2737 with the dash 3 amendment and the conceptual amendment to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Bogus.
Yes.
Representative Brewer.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Nope.
Representative Kahn.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Thank you, committee members. House Bill 2737, as amended by the dash 3 and the conceptual amendment, has passed and heads to revenue. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2737 and thank Deborah and also Colonel Caldwell and Mr. McDonald. We will now open the other two. We'll now open a work session on House Bill 2847 and House Bill 3333.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2847 requires that the Oregon Veterans Home account be listed on the charitable checkoff program. You have the dash 2 amendment, which has been attached by action yesterday. The dash 2 amendment has that same third year eligibility provision on page 2, lines 3 and 4.
Okay, will you hold just a moment, please? Okay, committee members, you should now have in front of you House Bill 2847 with a dash 2 amendment, and House Bill 3333 with a dash 3. Wouldn't you know it? That should go to Vegas. Amendment.
Madam Chair, let me just give a brief review of House Bill 3333. It creates a wounded soldier relief program. Again, makes the fund for that program eligible for the charitable checkoff program. You have the dash 2, which adds eligibility for the member of the military reserves. It deletes a 30-day service requirement. It changes rules to regulations, add provisions that interest earned by the account stays in the account, and it rotates all eligible charitable checkoff entities onto the tax form. And again, you have the third-year eligibility provision in the dash 3 of House Bill 3333. It is on page 2, lines 5 and 6.
And I don't have that one.
Which one do you not have?
The dash 3 is for 3333.
Anyone else?
Anybody else need the dash 3s? Okay, on House Bill 3333-3, since I'm a co-sponsor of this bill, I do find that same information on lines 5 and 6 of page 2 of the amendment, which need to be omitted. Lines 5 and 6 on page 2 of the 3333-3.
It's identical language.
Yes.
Therefore, ma'am, line 23, page 1, A in parentheses would have to be deleted.
Right.
Line 23.
Page 1.
Page 1.
A.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Do you have any other discussion regarding the dash 3 of the 3333? If not, I will accept the motion.
Madam Chair, I move the conceptual amendment to the dash 3s to House Bill 3333 to remove lines 5 and 6 on page 2 and the bracketed A on line 23 of page 1.
Representative Barnhart has moved the conceptual amendment to delete lines 5 and 6 on page 2 of the dash 3 amendment, and also to eliminate on line 23 of the first page of the dash 3 amendment the small a in parentheses. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the dash 3 conceptual amendments are accepted.
And Madam Chair, I'll move the dash 3 amendments as conceptually amended to House Bill 3333.
Representative Barnhart has moved the dash 3 amendment with the conceptual amendments attached for adoption. Any discussion? Any objection? Representative Hunt?
Just for the same reason as the prior bill.
And what was that reason?
That not the objection to adding this cause, but to objection to rotating off the other entities currently listed on the tax form.
Thank you. Any other objections? Okay, if not, we will accept the dash 3 amendment with the two conceptual changes.
And Madam Chair, I'll move House Bill 3333 to the Committee on Revenue as amended with, and as conceptually amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 3333 with its dash 3 amendment and the two conceptual amendment changes to lines 23 on the first page of the dash 3 and lines 5 and 6 of page 2 of the dash 3 to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Bocas?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Farr?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
No.
Representative
Conn?
Aye.
Representative
Farr?
Aye.
Chair Nelson?
Aye. House Bill 3333 with the dash 3 amendment and the two conceptual amendments has now passed and heads to revenue. Thank you very much, members of the committee. And we will now move to House Bill 2847, and I'll call Irv Fletcher. You should have a dash two amendment on 2847. Welcome, Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I put my House employee badge away. I'm now speaking this morning as the emeritus president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. The employees at the Veterans Home in the Dalles are represented by United Steelworkers Local Union 9170. They asked me to appear on their behalf this morning in support of 2847. I said my remarks would be short. They are.
Are you for 2847? The dash two amendment?
I haven't seen the dash two. I hope they don't greatly change the bill, particularly if it's the obvious opposite direction. I'd have to oppose it. But
we will now provide you with a copy of the dash two so you can.
I'm assuming that's.
It simply states that the entities eligible to receive contributions by means of a checkoff on the Oregon Individual Income Tax Form will have equitable or equivocal options on the face of the form, and that this list shall be included regularly to the Oregon Charitable Checkoff Commission, who shall provide a list of who's eligible. We shall maximize the opportunity for all of these entities, which are all very worthwhile, to receive their funds.
Does that change the word permanent on 2847?
2847, the whole purpose of this bill was to make it permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And I shall check that for sure. I do not see that. It's in the
summary.
Summary, but yeah. I don't see it in the form.
Lines 14 and 15 on page 1, I believe. Well, maybe that's not it.
What it says is a designation under subsection 1 of this section shall be made with respect to any tax year on the returns of that tax year, and once made shall be irrevocable.
Yeah, different issue.
But that does not fit the title.
No, different issue. No.
It remains on page 1, doesn't it? Shall print on the face of the form.
Yeah.
Line 7 and 11.
That's right. It says there. It's right about that.
Department of Revenue shall print on the face of the Oregon Income Tax Form a space for tax registers and coverage due made to the Oregon Veterans Allowance account.
But the purpose of this bill was to make this a permanent listing?
Well, that certainly does that.
It could be in statute permanently, ma'am, until we change it.
Do you think we should accept this? I don't know how else we can, because it can always be removed by a good lawyer.
My power of attorney only goes to the original.
But otherwise, I'm assuming that that's not a good. It's already on there to begin with. Mr. McDonald, help. Please.
It's already on there.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matt McDonald representing Oregon Veterans. The Oregon Veterans Home is on the instructions for the tax form, but not on the tax form itself at the present time. If you rotated it, of course, it would take its turn in rotation. And again, I think that's the fairest way.
May I ask a question, if it's all right with you? How did the Oregon Veterans Home qualify to be in the charitable checkoff program.
It qualified in that it has over $1 million in operations through the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. It got the 10,000 signatures that it were required by law to get and met all the other qualifications to get on the charitable checkoff list. It was different in that it's a not a state agency, but it's run by the Department of Veterans Affairs, where most of the others are charitable organizations run by charitable foundations mostly. And it has to be, all the monies have to be spent in Oregon on all of these 18.
Any other questions? Representative Hunt.
Mr. Van, I'm glad you pointed out the words, Mr. Fletcher, because I think we were so focused on the amendments that we had, at least I had stopped looking back at the base bill. Although it does say in that, both in the description of the bill at the top and also even in the text in Section 2, it says, or it certainly implies, that it would be permanently on the form. With the incorporation of the dash 2s, there would be no entity that would be permanently on the form. So the ones that are permanently on the form today would be rotated off. This would be rotated on, but there would, even though it says permanently listed on the form, it would be within a pool of entities that would be listed on the form over time. So the word permanently here is certainly was consistent with the original bill. It's a little inconsistent with the amendment, and I don't know. Perhaps when LC incorporates the amendments, I wouldn't be surprised if they even change that description. I don't know if that's how they would function, but just wanted to make sure you were clear on that as you're considering the dash twos.
Right. You know, that's a very good point. Should I say that out loud?
Sure.
The chair pointed out that if we set up this rotational system, they're already on the list.
That's right.
We don't need the bill at all.
Exactly. And there is no proposed draft, I don't believe, to remove it.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask a question of the charitable checkoff chairman.
Charitable checkoff chairman, that's a good one. His name is Chuck, too. Chuck McDonald. Chairman Chuck, for the charitable checkoff.
Mr. McDonald, is the Oregon Veterans Home in the charitable checkoff program permanently right now, or is there some time at which it would expire or need to re-up in some way?
It would re-up. At the present time, it would need to get 10,000 signatures again in the future, but there's been a bill go through that would eliminate that requirement. If that requirement is eliminated, then it will be automatically stay on the charitable checkoff list, to my understanding of the rules.
Okay, thank you. It's my belief that we should not bet on anything going through if it's much like the other sessions that I've served in, so I will accept a motion on the conceptual amendment. Representative Farr.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move that we accept the conceptual amendments, the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2847, which removes lines 3 and 4 on page 2 and the bracketed A on page 1.
Line 21?
Line 21. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Farr has moved the conceptual amendments to House Bill 2847, the dash 2 amendment, to eliminate lines 3 and 4 on page 2 and on page 21, on line 21 of page 1, the small a in parentheses. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, excuse me.
I was going to say, Madam Chair, I just don't think we need this bill, so I will be I just object.
The reason we go ahead is because it's good bills have often been left hanging in a committee, as we all know. And
I could remove my agenda.
Okay, thank you. To risk this home, I would not want to do so in any way. Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? If not, the conceptual amendments pass unanimously. Representative Farr.
Madam Chair, I move that we accept the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2847 with the conceptual amendments.
Second.
Madam Chair, according to my records, you already have adopted the dash two. You've now essentially changed the dash two, so the dash twos are already on, according to my records.
Well, your records should all, records should be right.
I have a, and maybe we can just check this. I have a 4-1-2 vote yesterday afternoon with Hunt voting no, Barnhart and Farr excused.
Okay.
I think I closed the work session on that bill at that time.
That's correct.
This is what my note says. Before we adopted the dash two.
So if you wish to do it, you already have the dash two as conceptually amended on the bill.
Okay, the dash two. Representative Farr has moved that we adopt the dash two amendment to House Bill 2847 along with its conceptual amendments. Is there any objection? Oh, any discussion first? Now, objection.
Yeah, I would just raise the same. I certainly have no objection to continue to have the Oregon Veterans Home on the instructions or even moved on to the form. I just object to rotating off some of the other groups, especially for me, the child abuse prevention and the efforts to stop domestic and sexual violence. So I'll have to be a no.
Okay, is there any other objection? If not, that motion has passed. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we pass House Bill 2847 as amended onto the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Farr has moved House Bill 2847 with the dash two amendment and the two conceptual amendment changes, or two conceptual amendments to House Bill 2847 included. Is there any discussion? This will be headed to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Broome.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
No.
Representative Palm.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Vogel.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 2847 with the dash two amendment and the two conceptual amendments passes on to revenue. Thank you very much. All right. We will now move to House Bill 2864.
2864. My fault, this one's done.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2864 creates a Veterans Discharge Stipend Program within the Department of Veterans Affairs. This is the bill that we attempted to take other bills and put into and create one financial assistance program, and that's what the dash two does. It creates the Oregon Veterans Emergency Financial Assistance Program. On page one of the dash two amendment, we have listed the uses for that fund as emergency or temporary housing and related housing expenses, such as expenses for utilities, insurance, house repairs, rent, assistance, or food, emergency medical or dental expenses, emergency transportation, expenses related to starting a business, such as business licenses or occupational licenses, temporary income after military discharge, and legal assistance. I think you may recognize some of the other bills that you've talked about this session in that list. The dash twos have a date of the 4th of May, and it came out late yesterday while we were meeting. We tried to distribute those in your new bill pile that should have been waiting for you.
And they're attached to the committee report. Sometimes when you can't find them, it's, you may not be aware of that.
I got it. Thanks.
Okay.
Oh. Madam Chair, your concern yesterday was about the definition. I should say your concern on Tuesday was about the definition of veteran in this, and I had some discussions with legislative counsel on this, and I have not looked at this to see.
Well, if you look on page two, I think we've not corrected it yet. Page two, lines 6, 7, and 8. Mm-hmm. Well, as a matter of fact, lines 3, 4, and 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Yeah, it's the 30-day issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you left off for more than 30 days in both of those places, that would take care of it, I think.
Well, although, can I ask, Madam Chair, and maybe you or Representative Boquist can answer this, a veteran as defined in ORS 408.225,
okay,
isn't that our new definition?
That's what it's going
to be. So that would, yeah, therefore cover everyone inclusive.
Manager, my only comment would be, and I'm not a lawyer, so the two esteemed gentlemen would have to say that, but A covers it. I just don't know, is it and or? Does it have to meet all three, A, B, and C? Four. Correct me if I'm wrong to one of my esteemed attorneys here. If I would read this, if on line 2, A, where it says a veteran is defined in ORS, da-da-da-da-da, if the word or was inserted in there, it would be or, and that would meet the intent. But I believe A covers everything we've already talked about anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose, Madam Chair, the other option would be strike lines 3 through 8 completely, because it's defined in 408.225 already that we've amended, and it's passed the House floor. I have not checked the Senate, but in fact, I mean, it came out of the Senate committee three or four days ago to the Senate floor.
Well, I appreciate Representative Hunt picking up on this. That's mm-hmm. excellent, brilliant.
For the record, Madam Chair, though, I am not a lawyer. I want that made clear.
Brilliant, though.
Well, I don't know.
My character representative.
We've got one. He's standing here right now.
I'm not a vet. He's not a lawyer.
I do believe that would correct it, too. And I think it has in everything that we wanted to be able to help protect our veterans with medical or dental expense or housing expenses, emergency transportation, business starting, temporary income after their military discharge. And the only thing I worry about there is they say temporary income after military discharge. We didn't say what type of discharge. Mr. McDonald? It just says temporary income after military discharge. We should have had honorable, right?
Yes, ma'am. That's to say after discharge under honorable conditions.
Free run.
Where were we going? Well, that line definitely has to be changed. Okay. Any other corrections anyone sees? I'll close the work session on House Bill 2864. Thank you, Mr. McDonald. We will now hear House Bill 28, have a work session on 2844.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2844 limits the delinquent property tax interest that can be charged on property of state-activated National Guard members to a maximum of 6% for the duration of the activation. You have the Dash 2 amendment. I don't think this has any amendments.
Nope.
Amazing.
Yes.
Just
This is pretty straightforward.
It is good.
I was going to say, Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am, Representative Kong.
I move that House Bill 2844, gosh, it's been so long, be sent to the floor with a due pass motion, please.
With a referral.
It has a referral?
The tax issues.
To be referred to House Revenue Committee.
Thank you. Representative Kong has moved House Bill 2844 to the Revenue Committee with any kind of recommendation.
Due pass, please.
With a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? I did it, Karen. Will you please call the roll? I got her job.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kong.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Roquist.
Aye.
Representative
Broom.
Aye.
Chair
Nelson. Aye. House Bill 2844 moves quickly to the Department, the Committee on Revenue with a unanimous vote in favor of the motion. I will close the work session on 2844, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2846.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2846 exempts homesteads owned by 100% disabled veterans from property taxes. It permits veterans who are eligible for property tax exemption who are at least 70% disabled to defer the remaining property taxes on the homestead. It applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2006.
Okay. I do not have an amendment in my file. Do we have an amendment to this?
I know of no amendment on this one.
Well, I would like to just go over this with you then. Committee members, on line 14, we agreed we would delete this statement. One duly licensed physician is rated as having disabilities of 40% or more. That would be deleted, and we would drop lines 19 and 20. And amend 21.
Well, Madam Chair, my recollection is we passed a bill yesterday that makes some major changes in these sections already. It probably takes care of this.
Well, this refers to wages, and 100% disabled, as I wrote in my note, now gets $28,000. So the number that we, the dollars we have here are out of line.
That's correct, Madam Chair, but we did pass a bill yesterday that makes those changes, I think. Didn't we?
House Bill 2945.
You think so?
Yeah, we did that yesterday.
I don't follow up that, Madam Chair. I mean, that was one of the ones that Representative Hunt and I think several other representatives, we tried to roll together, if you'll recall, into one package instead of having three separate ones.
Was this tax exemption issue in that bill?
Portions of this bill was rolled together.
And also on page 3, line 27, we needed to delete that portion referring to a duly licensed physician. I will now close the work session on House Bill 2846 while our good administrator verifies it in line with 2945. Thank you very much. I will open a work session now on House Joint Memorial 13.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 13 urges the President of the United States and Congress to exempt veteran disability and pension income from federal income taxation. You have the -1 amendment, which deletes disability. It would then urge the President of the United States and Congress to exempt veteran pension income from federal income taxation.
That's the McDonald's amendment, isn't it?
It is the Donna Nelson amendment.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, if you're open to a motion.
I am.
I would move the dash one amendment to HJM 13.
Thank you. Representative Hunt has moved the dash one amendment to the House Joint Memorial 13. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, the dash one is accepted.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
I would move House Joint Memorial 13 as amended to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Hunt has moved House Joint Memorial 13 along amended through the dash one amendment to the House floor with a do pass adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative
Trump. Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Goldberg.
Aye.
Representative Broome.
Aye.
Representative
Farr. Excuse me.
Chair.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you, members of the committee, and as the House Joint Memorial 13 almost has passed, but Representative Farr, we're going to give you a ninth inning stretch opportunity here to vote on House Joint Memorial 13 that urges the President and Congress to exempt veteran disability and pension income from the federal income tax income taxation. And your vote would be
aye.
Representative Farr votes aye. With a unanimous decision on House Joint Memorial 13 with its dash one amendment, it is passed and heads to the House. Thank you.
This is going to have a debate on the floor.
We will have a wonderful debate on the floor, and I think Representative Comp would probably be the best one to handle it.
I haven't been in the middle of a good debate in a long time.
You're going to love this one.
Okay.
I think you'll do very good, very well with that activity as you spent your life doing that, I believe. We will now move to HCR, House Concurrent Resolution 14.
Madam Chair, HCR 14 recognizes June 14, 2005 as Honor Our National Guard Day, and I must confess that I'm not certain that I got the signal straight from you as to whether you wanted this 14. On the agenda or not. We had another House concurrent resolution that we amended for Atomic Veterans Day, and this one remains on your agenda for action if you wish.
We do wish that, and we are thankful that it's here. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do. Colonel Caldwell?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department.
Colonel Caldwell, is there a more appropriate date than June the 14th for the Oregon National Guard to be honored on one specific day? If it is, we're happy to change.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, typically we celebrate the birthday of the National Guard, which is I don't have the exact date for you. It's
I think we'll see.
Shows you how people. Important it is. But
oh my goodness! Okay.
But
well, maybe we'll just stand at ease while you find that out.
Well, yes, if you could,
would that
you
be okay? All right.
Maybe move on and come back.
We'll move on and we'll come back. And thank you. We'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 14.
I thought June 14th was already something.
And we'll move to House Bill 3413. You should have the dash one, as I understand.
Yes. I do not. Madam Chair, House Bill 3413 allows public employees who are members of the military to take up to 15 days military leave per year for training while on state active duty or federal active duty. It declares an emergency, takes effect upon passage. You have the dash one amendment.
Which essentially replaces the bill, doesn't it, in effect?
Yes.
The dash one amendment authorizes military leave for any purpose not limited to training. Madam Chair, you saw this issue previously. I believe it was House Bill 2138, which was an attempt to clarify when that 15 days leave was appropriate or not. It does say 15 days of leave for annual training at the present time. This would clarify that the 15 days that an employee who is on military assignment for state active duty or federal active duty would also be eligible for those 15 days of military leave.
Representative Boquist, what is it now?
I'm reading the original law, Madam Chair, and I believe that the bill and the amendment simply adds temporary active duty and state active duty to, as a definition of the 15-day leave. And I see that there is no revenue impact, so we're not talking about paid leave, we're just talking about that an employer and employer, regardless of who it is, would have to grant 15 days of leave to fulfill this military obligation. I see the doctor shaking his head, so you tell me, doctor.
I'm going to need Colonel Caldwell to come back.
Madam Chair, if you don't mind my inserting some information here, this would have a substantial fiscal impact, and you have requested that this bill go to Ways and Means if it leaves this committee. The
House Bill 3413, good Colonel Caldwell. And do you have a dash one amendment?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Where do you see that? Because we had another one. Well, it says no revenue impact.
Does everyone have the dash one amendment?
Thank you. Yeah, but would the fiscal cover the cities and towns? Well, I would be revenue.
Madam Chair. Lines 10 and 11 on the original bill.
Does anyone else need the dash one?
Leave of absence from duties for a period not exceeding 15 days in any one training year without loss of time, pay, or regular leave and without impairment of efficiency rating or other rights or benefits to which the officer or employee is entitled. So it does require the leave to be paid.
That was the point of it, I think, wasn't it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. There's another bill, that, and I don't have the number of it right off the top of my head, but we've dealt with this subject. It was an AFSCME submitted bill, and I think in essence, what the intent has been, I think, through both of these was to widen the interpretation as it is today. The interpretation is for use for only annual training. It's become problematic for some, and we introduced a bill early on to try to define annual training, which really got, so there's actually three bills, I guess. And we were okay with the amendment to widen the interpretation for HR managers, because HR managers are conflicted with trying to discern what annual training is, what one of the military services writes in their orders. My recommendation would be to table this and let the other bill, because I know we moved it, and I would, Jim's shaking his head no, so maybe that isn't the right way to go. But point being that I think the wider the interpretation, the better it is for the HR manager to deal with this subject. Currently, public employees have a 15-day paid military leave for annual training. That's the current statute. And this, again, the objective, I think, this committee indicated early on was to make that available for any kind of military training, and primarily because of the call-ups and the other activities that have been going on. We've had a situation where it isn't a cut set piece any longer. You don't have 2 days a month, 15 days annual training a year. There's other kinds of training that's being developed because of call-ups, because of deployments. So I think the committee had felt at that point, well, let's make it 15 days of any kind of military duty and leave it at that, which would simplify things for the HR managers throughout the state and local governments. At least that was the intent that I think you had.
Representative Hunt, would you look up House Bill 2138, please? I didn't bring my binder. And tell us what the line is, main line.
Requires that official military orders make certain specific statement for a person to receive pay during military leave. We did have a dash one. I didn't know that we took action on that. Did we take action on that?
I don't remember that we did.
No. We have a dash one. We clearly had a hearing on it. But the dash one amendment to House Bill 2138 specifically references a person shall receive pay for up to 15 days of leave per year while absent for performing military duty. So it is very similar in focus. But the question is, if we haven't moved it, then it doesn't matter.
Right. And the question is, who pays it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, currently the employer pays that 15 days leave. As the law has been since probably the 50s, as near as I can tell, if I remember right, history correctly, was that this was a benefit offered to people, to government employees who would stay in the military or in the reserve components of any of the services, and it's an accepted practice at county, city, special districts, any governmental entity in the state of Oregon, that you would get the 15 days paid leave, which the state has interpreted that as 10 working or 11 working days. And again, that was to capture this 15 days of annual training period. So it is being paid now. So it is part of the it's part of the inner workings of all governmental entities, particularly the state, presently. So it isn't an additional cost if you modify this language and widen the interpretation of what constitutes that 15 days of military leave. You're not creating any larger burden than it already exists. If you did nothing, it would still be 15 days of annual training leave and per year per employee.
So what is the need for us to do this?
Well, Madam Chair, again, the problem has been over the last, since 9-1-1, practically speaking, is that not every kind of military duty is quote-unquote annual training. There is active duty for special work. There is deployments that are Title 32 under the control of the governor in our case, or in reserve status in the reserve status case, that they do a type of training that isn't under the category. And essentially what annual training is, a pot of money that the Department of Defense fences out and says this money will be used for quote-unquote annual training. But there's other pots of money that can be used for maintenance work or for other types of schools or something. There's all kinds of different pots of money. So I think the idea was either make the thing, in our bill, we said either define annual training specifically so there's no misinterpretation by the HR managers and the department heads, or in AFSCME's case, They wanted it wide open for any type of military training. We don't care. We just wanted to make it simple and understandable for people to be able to execute on the requirement.
Is there always 15 days of annual training?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, indeed, that's the current program, is you have 15 days of annual training in the reserve components. So there are instances where we've had 21-day annual training periods. We've had 30-day annual training periods. They're rare, but they have occurred based on the training. We went to the National Training Center and a few years ago. We were required to go. That was a 3-week annual training. A lot of members did 4 weeks. They only got 15 days paid leave out of that. And if they wanted additional leave, they took it without pay or they used up their vacation time.
The follow-up. So what this bill really does is means that HR departments don't have to figure out which leave is annual training and which leave is something else.
Correct.
And it may affect the time of the year during which that 15 days gets taken.
That is correct.
Because it might happen early in the year on something else.
Correct.
But then, of course, it's used up by the time you get to annual training.
That is correct. For instance, in my case, I use my annual training days one day at a time, sometimes 3 days at a time, and I spread it out over a 12-month period, depending on what activity is going on and when it's okay for me to use that. So most people are in a unit that has an established date and time group of where they go and train. In my case, that isn't so.
Another follow-up. I think you've just explained why there's no fiscal. Because we're already spending, the employers are already spending this money.
It's correct.
They're spending it at a particular time with a particular set of criteria during the year.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, that is correct. Every employee could have a multitude of different training opportunities, and your department, depends on its size, could have people going at all times of the year.
Yeah.
And again, it's part of the process today, so there's no additional fiscal.
Well, then a final follow-up, if I may. It sounds to me then, Colonel, is what we're really doing is getting rid of some obsolete language in the statute.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think that's precisely it. We're trying to simplify it again so the HR managers don't have to figure out whether or not it says annual training, active duty special work, school training. Once it's gone, it's gone. Once it's used, make it simple, make it executable, and then we don't have some of the issues that we've had.
Okay, are there any other questions, Representative Boquist?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I concur with what Representative Barnhart said, but I have to ask our good Dr. Jim here, because it says fiscal requested on 427, and I think earlier he said that there was a fiscal. So if it could, dear Administrator, explain himself.
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, this bill is very similar to House Bill 2138. On House Bill 2138, there was a substantial fiscal. House Bill 2138 was the governor's bill, and we thought it more appropriate this be brought in a committee bill. We've asked for the fiscal on this. We have not gotten the fiscal back on it yet. In opinion of your committee staff, it depends on which side of the spectrum you're on. Some agencies have indicated that they are not currently providing this military leave unless it is for annual training. In that case, the fiscal is large, because they're going to now, as a result of this bill, they would be providing paid leave for military leave other than annual training. What Colonel Caldwell has said is that this leave is already being paid for annual training. He indicates that there would be less of a fiscal impact than we are hearing from the Legislative Fiscal Office. But we have not got the fiscal on this specific bill or these amendments, although we've asked for it.
What I also perceive is that an employer could say, use your vacation time. That qualifies. Use your sick leave time. That qualifies. There's nothing in here that preempts either of those being used to fill this requirement.
Well, you know what occurs to me is that if this does have a significant fiscal, and Colonel Caldwell is right that there always is annual training, then it may be that there's some agencies that aren't actually following the law.
Yes.
And if that's the case, there isn't any real fiscal. It's a made-up one based on the fact that they're not doing what they're supposed to do under the current law. If we simplify the current law so that the modifier training isn't in there, it makes it easier for them to do what they're supposed to do in the first place.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the current law says for all periods of annual active duty for training as a member of the National Guard, National Guard Reserve, or any reserve component of the Armed Forces of the United States and the Public Health Service. And again, everybody is wrapped around the axle about the term active duty annual training. Our contention is, you know, this is making a mountain out of a molehill here, because you're only going to get 15 days of paid leave regardless, as long as you're doing it for the military in some capacity. What difference does it make to the employer whether or not the order said you went to annual training or you went to training to support a mobilization? In our case, from our department standpoint, it's a money issue with us. We can pay a person for certain types of duty, and we could put them on annual training if we have money in that pot. If we don't have money in that federal pot, then we got to go look at another pot of money and say, now we're going to pay you out of active duty special work instead of annual training. And it's so for a department, a state department or a county or city to say, well, it's going to cost me more money, I just don't see how that can be. If a person is there now, they're still entitled to that 15 days. In some cases, we even went to a circumstance where we had problem employers, state agencies, and we cut orders to say, this is annual training money, make sure they're paid out of that, even though everybody else in their group is paid out of another pot of money in order to make sure that individual got their 15 days of leave. So
this does need to, on line 10, we need to insert without loss of accrued vacation or sick leave.
I believe, Madam Chair, that the phrase regular leave would cover vacation leave and sick leave.
Correct.
Regular leave?
Right.
You think that's what that means?
Yeah.
Okay. Good point.
Madam Chair, question to the Administrator again?
Yes, sir.
I guess a parliamentary or technical question, Jim, if we pass the Dash 1 amendment, pass this bill on, and then LFO comes back and says it's above the 50,000 magic mark of Ways and Means, what happens?
Representative Boquist, Madam Chair, what we have requested, what your chair has requested, is that this be referred to Ways and Means. So if you should decide to pass it out, I would suggest that you send it to Ways and Means.
Okay. We have a work session, Madam Chair?
Beg your pardon?
Are we in work session?
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3413.
Yeah. Representative Boquist moves the Dash 1 to House Bill 3413. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, Dash 1 is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would like to move House Bill 3413 as amended with a do pass to a referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 3413 with a do pass recommendation to Ways and Means. Being such, House Bill 3413 is appropriately amended by the Dash 1 amendment. Is there any discussion?
Representative Cox.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative
Paul. Excuse.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 3413 with the Dash 1 amendment passes on to Ways and Means. Thank you very much. And we will now move to House Joint Memorials 15, 16, and 21. I will open a work session on those three. House Joint Memorials 15, 16, and 21. Did I close it on the other one? I can't remember. If not, I'll tap in and also close the work session on House Bill
3413.
House Joint Memorial 15 and 16 and 21.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 15 urges Congress to allow returning combat veterans up to 21 days to decompress and make transition to civilian life. There's no amendment that I know of on that one. House Joint Memorial 16 urges Congress to establish grants for veterans starting new businesses. I know of no amendment on that one. House Joint Memorial 21 urges the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to demand excellence from contracted private providers of health care. I'm sorry that our Admiral Johnson
is not here. We should have heard that bill that day.
Actually, it was on the agenda that day.
But oh dear!
It didn't quite fail. It was a busy day that day.
Yes,
there
it
are
was.
No amendments that I know for that one.
I'll accept a motion to move House Joint Memorial 15.
And Chair,
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I'll move House Joint Memorial 15 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Boquist has moved House. Representative Barnhart, I beg your pardon, has moved House Joint Memorial 15 to the House floor with a do pass recommendation or do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Boquist. Aye. Representative Bruin. Excused.
Representative Farr.
Excused.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kahn.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Would you like to carry this bill, Representative Hunt?
Bruin has to vote.
I will allow the good Representative Bruin to vote on House Joint Memorial 15.
Oh, aye. That doesn't be a clause.
And since he was late, I think maybe Representative Hunt, would you want to carry this bill?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, thank you.
Bio break.
Representative Bruin, you almost got in trouble right there. No, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, House Joint Memorial 16. Urges Congress to establish grants for veterans starting new businesses, and we talked to members of different economic groups, and this is important. And I noticed yesterday we had a little problem with a bill. We were wondering, you know, is this really necessary? Well, let me assure you, it is necessary. I have heard from several individuals who, coming back, had no jobs, and therefore, you know, had been thinking, I guess, while they're over in Iraq or Afghanistan about what they could do, and have come to me to ask, where do we get money to start a business? So, of course, I keep wanting to send them to Economic Development and the Small Business Administration. But I think assisting veterans is a very good thing to do. I'll accept a motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bruin.
I move House Joint Memorial 16 to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Bruin has moved House Joint Memorial 16 to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Boquist.
Excused.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Excused.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kahn.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Joint Memorial 16 is headed to the floor, and Representative Bruin, would you like to carry this bill?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And on to House Joint Memorial 21. This really, we hope, calls the attention to some dilatory dilatory actions by providers of medical services for our veterans. We think that ought to be investigated and improvements ought to be made. Some have to wait many months and weeks until they are even in, feel like they can even get in to see a physician. But I think this is a good one for us to work on, and I see the good Director of Veteran Affairs also nodding his head. it may have come from him to begin with. I'm not quite sure. Or maybe our good county veterans officer, Diane Salenti from Yamhill County. I'll accept the motion. On House Joint Memorial 1, Reps and Comp.
Madam Chair, I make a motion to have House Joint Memorial 21 with a due adopt recommendation to the floor.
Reps and Comp has moved House Joint Memorial 21 with a due pass recommendation to the floor. Is there any discussion? Aaron.
Representative Brooks.
Aye.
Representative Clark.
Excuse.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative
Conn.
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Boquist.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Representative Boquist, would you like to carry this? So you probably know this firsthand.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. Nothing like talking the talk when you've walked the walk, right? And you've been there, done that. I'll close. Thank you very much. House Joint Memorials 15, 16, and 21 have passed. I'll close the work session on those three joint memorials. I'll open work sessions on House Joint Memorial 32, 33, and 34.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 32 urges Congress to pass a National Guard and Reserve Retirement Act that provides for National Guard and Reserve members to retire at age 55 or having reached 30 years of service.
Thank you, Dr. Stembridge. Is there any discussion? We know this is a good bill, and we'd like the National Guard and Reserve to be recognized for their service in the same way that other branches are being recognized. Accept the motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 32 to the House floor with a due adopt recommendation.
Representative Bruner has moved House Joint Memorial 32 to the House floor with a due adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Farr.
Excuse.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kahn.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Chair
Nelson. Aye. House Joint Memorial 32 passes on to the House floor with a unanimous vote, and I think Representative Farr should carry this bill. I know with her father's many years of experience and also her husband's that she could identify very closely with this bill, so we'll let her know. And besides that, she's not here. Thank you very much. House Joint Memorial 33.
Madam Chair, HJM 33 urges Congress to direct the Department of Defense to minimize the time a National Guard member spend on active federal duty in order to assure that they are available to accomplish state missions.
Thank you. Dr. Stembridge, Representative Boquist, you're a co-sponsor of this bill with Representative Krupp. Do you wish to say anything about it?
No, Madam Chair. I wish to move that House Joint Memorial 33 be sent to the floor with a due adopt.
Recommendation. Representative Boquist has moved House Joint Memorial 33 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair.
Oh.
May I ask Brent a question to the good Representative Boquist?
As soon as I ask for, okay. Is there any discussion?
Okay. Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
You bet.
Representative Boquist, I have a little bit of an issue with this bill, only in the sense, and maybe you can clear that up for me, only in the sense that I'm not sure that we sitting here in Salem can fully understand the military implications of urging this to the Department of Defense. And I have not served in the military, but my reservation is that we start saying, you know, what the Department of Defense does with troops and what they don't do with troops. So I would just have you clarify my stinking thinking a little bit.
Well, I want you to know, right, Representative Bruin, I felt the same way.
Okay.
And I looked at it from another side. I understand the purpose of this memorial. We do have states that are in jeopardy many times, for example, the fire season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to bring them back from Iraq to help with fire.
Sure.
Representative Boquist, you want to answer that question, please?
I'd be delighted to answer that question. very simply, in my professional opinion, the Department of Defense is screwing over reserve component soldiers by making them conduct training for 3 to 6 months before they're deployed, when in fact they're able, willing, and fully competent and fully trained to do the job. And so we're wasting tax dollars, we're taking the soldiers away from their homes, and furthermore to that, which is not addressed by this bill, I personally witness, you know, reserve component soldiers treated as second-class soldiers when in fact in combat, when in fact they were good in a counterinsurgency, better than the active component soldiers. So to me, this is one of those cases where this is another issue that at the state level we can't solve it. It's out of our purview. And I think, rather, I rarely agree with the Oregonian said it best, one of the things this committee can do and the whole body of the legislature is tell our members in Congress that, you know, there's stinking thinking, is that it, ma'am?
Yes.
Back in Washington, D.C. And so you guys need to fix this.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment? So which lines did you wish to amend with this?
I agree 100% with everything you said. I mean, I think we've had testimony after testimony after testimony in various on various bills that shows what a high level of professionalism the guards in general, and the Oregon Guard in particular. I have a good friend of mine that went back, he testified, Captain of the Guard, outstanding. I think they do a lot of things better because of their experience. That issue aside, I still have some reservations about us telling the Department of Defense through the Congress, or at least asking, to make decisions in a time of war that, in my mind, are more battlefield sorts of decisions rather than decisions that this body necessarily would have any wisdom over. I fully hear what you're saying, Brian. I just that's my reservation on this.
I'd like to call Colonel Caldwell. Let's hear it from the chief himself.
I'm not sure Colonel Caldwell wants to talk to this.
Well, I guess we have to subpoena him.
He could be Private Caldwell come Monday.
What did you say?
He could be Private Caldwell come Monday.
Oh, that's right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I was a private once, so I but it wasn't a bad rank, actually. I can appreciate, Representative Bruin, your concerns, and I think that to the unknowing and the folks that haven't lived what Representative Bokus and I have lived for 25, 30 years, there is a clear bias toward the National Guard. The best example I can give you is that we have embedded active duty trainers throughout the system, both Guard and Reservists. In both systems, there's active duty folks that come in and they assist us in our training. The 3rd Battalion, 116th Cavalry, which is the unit I've actually joined in as a private and ended up commanding and is currently in Iraq, went to Camp Rialia. They used their quote-unquote annual training dollars we talked about earlier to go to Camp Rialia and sharpen the skills that they know they're going to need on a daily basis, particularly marksmanship and these sort of things. Active duty trainers were standing right there with these soldiers. They went through a world-class range that the federal government paid for at Camp Rialia, that's as good as any range in the country, and they qualified on their weapons. They, 3 weeks later, departed to Fort Bliss, Texas, for their train-up. It's a four-month, five-month train-up. When they got to Fort Bliss, they brought an Army Reservist captain in who hadn't been on active duty. He was an IRR guy, individual area reserve guy, hadn't been on active duty for 7-8 years, handed him a manual and said, go out here on a substandard range and do marksmanship. The commander said, wait a minute, I just finished this, and your guys were standing there. And they said, but we weren't there, do it again. That's what this resolution talks to. That's the kind of ridiculous behavior that has occurred in the reserve component. It doesn't happen in the Marine Corps. I'll give the Marine Corps credit. They don't operate that way. The Air National Guard doesn't operate that way. Neither does the Air Force Reserve. I can't speak to the Navy Reserve, but I know I've known enough people in both the others. They don't operate that way. They say, you got a piece of paper that said you did it. We trust you. Move on to the next subject. Not the Army. Not with the Guard. There's a bias that's built in that's been there for 354 years, and I doubt if it's going to change overnight. It's a cultural bias, and I think this is the kind of message that this body needs to send, this legislature needs to send to our elected representatives and to the Department of Defense. It's time to grow up and get in the real world and take a page out of the Marine Corps book.
Representative Farr.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Caldwell, I was just going to mention that when we were at Camp Rialia, and I'm not sure if Representative Bruin was on that particular field excursion, but when you were touring the base, you mentioned to us that the training that you provide at Camp Rialia is actually superior to the training that those guardsmen are going to receive when they go elsewhere prior to deployment. Was that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, indeed. I think the facilities are as good or better than anything you'll find on active duty. The trainers are more experienced than typically what you find on an active duty base with the active duty unit. And I think ultimately, when you look at the quality of the results at the end of the day, it's superior to what you see on active duty. So much as a point, as you heard at Camp Rialia, the active duty's discovered that post and its good facilities, and they use it constantly. They use it constantly because they know we got the good stuff. We've got the, and the federal government's paid for it. State didn't pay for it. The federal government paid for it, and they know it's good, it's usable, and it's a great place to train, so they're using it more than we are right now.
Any other questions of the...
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm just going to make one last comment. I'll zip my lip on this one.
Are you sure you want to, Representative Bruin?
Yes, I am. I read all the whereas clauses on this, and I agree absolutely 100%. And I agree absolutely with everything. That's not what I read to in the relating clause, though. The related clause, I mean, everything that's in the whereas is absolutely true, and I support. The relating to clause simply says, urges Congress to urge the Department of Defense to minimize the amount of time the National Guard are away from home. And to ensure the National Guard Reserve components remain capable of accomplishing state missions. And that's what I have the question with, is we're urging them to, you know, what...
Representative Bruin?
Yes, come.
That is a good point, and I feel the same way. That will not be a point of our joint memorial. It's a poorly written summary statement. Doesn't really even fit to the degree.
That's sort of the
degree.
It doesn't fit.
So it will not be on the memorial going to Congress.
Oh, okay.
If that gives you some good feeling.
Sure,
and thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any discussion, Representative Bocas?
Rebuttal, Madam Chair. I just call it the good representatives on page 2, lines 6 through 10. And this is the meat of it. This is what we're asking for right here. Colonel Caldwell mentioned, we, the members of the 73rd Legislative Senate, respectfully request that the Congress of the United States, the 109th Congress, direct the departments to utilize state training facilities for initial mobilization training, thereby reducing the total number of months that the National Guard soldiers are away from their families, so on and so forth. What we're saying here in a nutshell is we're not disagreeing with their training standards. We're not disagreeing with anything. We're saying that if they're already trained, then let's just train them here and let's not send them away. And for the record, in the rebuttal, I think it needs to be clearly stated that this bias not only exists when they depart, but when they come back. There is presently, and we can bring it up at a later time, but Colonel Caldwell will simply nod his head, I'm sure. We are presently and systematically, our units that are deployed are being stripped of their equipment when they come home for no apparent reason. That equipment is not being utilized elsewhere. It's being stripped from them to include their crew served weapons, their radio equipment, and their ability to function in the state of Oregon at state emergencies. And that is systematically being done and has nothing to do with the war in Iraq. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Jamie.
Well said.
I think we know who should carry this bill.
Well, I think that's
good. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. I want to ask
I just want to remind the committee that we still have about 6 bills to finish, and we must finish by 15 minutes to 11, so I'd love to always hear your opinions, but not today.
This is a question rather than an opinion. I assume, Colonel, that a unit commander would insist on additional training in an area if the unit commander thought that his National Guard forces were not ready in that area.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, that is not only is that true, and I as a commander, and I know Representative Boquist did the same as commander, is you have a monthly update on your training levels. You always know what you're supposed to be trained for, and you always take things that you don't have time to do, and you set them off to quote-unquote post-mobilization training. So you have identified long before you ever get to a mobilization situation exactly what you have not trained on. Mine was updated monthly. I kept it up every single month as a commander. It was part of the staff process. And the theory being, the day I walked into the mobilization station, I could say, I can do all of these. I've got evidence of that. And I need time to do these. I knew exactly how many days it was going to take me, not to include to pick up every piece of equipment, load it on a truck, a trailer, a rail car, and ship it to the station and get it to where I was going. We had all that detailed planning done. Every unit's supposed to do that. I can guarantee you that ours do that very well, as Representative Boquist indicated. When they come back without the equipment, that changes things dramatically. Most of our units are classified as the four-level mobilization right now, which is only thing worse than that's five. That means you're reorganizing. One's the best, four's the worst, except for five, and we're at four, we're C4 right now because we don't have equipment.
Well, I think that needs to be a bill. Let's do it. Let's gut and stuff and get us to C1 status.
Madam Chair, if you think the school issue is a big issue, I'm telling you, this is bigger than that. So,
all right.
For money.
Okay. Well, I don't mind. I think it's important to bring it out.
This will help a lot.
Okay. Thank you. I'll accept the motion to adopt
House Department 133. You already have a motion, Madam Chair.
Oh, I do? Yes. Oh, my goodness. Forgot where I was. Okay. Is there any more discussion? Seeing none. Aaron, could you call the roll, please?
Representative
Aye. Representative
Barnhart.
Yes.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Carr.
Aye.
Chair
Nelson.
Aye.
A unanimous vote moves House Joint Memorial to the floor as adopted. Thank you very much. All right. And thank you, good Representative Bruin, for those good questions. I think it was very important that information come out and now. And let's continue to battle for our military. House Joint Memorial 34, please. Oh, let me suggest that Brian Boquist carry House Joint Memorial 33.
I think that's a great idea.
How about I order it? Would you say?
Delighted, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Since he already has his presentation prepared.
Yes.
30 years, I know that one.
Okay. House Joint Memorial, Doctor.
House Joint Memorial 34 urges Congress to pass the National Guard and Reserve Bill of Rights Act of 2005, giving reservists rights to quality, affordable health care. You asked that we do a little bit more research on the National Guard and Reserve Bill of Rights Act of 2005 and put some additional language into it based on what the Bill of Rights Act actually says. It had not been introduced at the time we produce this House Joint Memorial. So you have the dash one. Who else needs the dash one?
I don't think I do.
Yep. It adds dental mental health.
Oh, okay.
It's border print, like dental mental
health. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I need one in here.
Actually, you may want to make sure that you're not looking at the dash ones to HJM 14. Because I think there was some mismatch.
You're right. I just did.
Okay.
I have HJM 14-1.
I don't have them either.
And the staff summary is
I just gave away my last 34.
Thank you.
Aaron, do we have additional copies of 34-1? Should we make someone come back to this? Or
do we come back to it?
To read it?
No. Okay, we will move now to House Bill 3331.
Oh, yeah.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3331 sets the pay of the Adjutant General and Assistant Adjutant General to pay levels prescribed for members of the active military who hold the same grade. It would declare an emergency effective July 1st, 2005. You have a dash one amendment that adds the pay of deputies to the amount prescribed for members of the active military who hold the same grade.
So what this bill does now is it brings equity to the pay for the three positions, as I understand it.
Okay.
Colonel Caldwell, I hate to put you on the spot, but you don't seem to have an option. General Reese isn't here. General Burns.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. You asked for some additional information last time this bill came up, and I think you have a Manning chart that we provided for you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Also, along with a survey of salaries and another sheet of paper looks like this that you asked for. And that particular, I guess what it depicts, obviously, is the adjutant general is the leader of the agency. If you look at the chart, it's rather confusing, but you'll see the different shades indicate federal position, state position, drill status, guard members, and state defense force. So in some cases, we have, and the best example I can show you is the right beneath the adjutant general, assistant adjutant general, air, it shows, it has DSG, which means drill status guardsmen. So they're not full-time people. But yet, if you see to the left, you'll see you don't have the charts.
We have nothing of that.
I have that.
No, that's the pay charts for what I provided.
No, he's talking staff.
He may be talking about this one, which we will get
on the scene.
Yeah. Ours is a different one.
We have both of our staff members running out of copies now.
Everyone's running.
Yeah. I don't.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill.
She actually has that.
Has it?
The other one.
3331.
Okay.
There it is. I reopened the House Committee on House Bill 3331.
Again, Madam Chair, what I tried to depict here was kind of give you an example of how we're currently organized, and the we are not a simple agency to operate because of our multitude of different different statuses and different. I guess we're not all one dog. We got a whole bunch of different dogs in our kennel, and it takes quite a little bit to manage that, as you might imagine. The information provided you is just factual information, and I'll leave any opinions up to other folks.
Any fair discussion?
Got a motion first.
Madam Chair, I agree on many points with Colonel Caldwell. However, given the fiscal constraints and the reality, the duties and responsibilities, the fact that we're trying to fund health care, life insurance, and everything else for soldiers who make less than $2,000 a month and they're deployed in Iraq and their families are back here, I just don't see that this is a financial reality that we can do at this time. And so whether there's a motion or not, Madam Chair, I will be a no vote.
Any other discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Farr.
I hadn't read Representative Boquist's letter prior to this session, but I had many of the same thoughts that he did. While I know that those salaries may not be in line with other states, they're still considerably higher than their subordinates and considerably higher than many of the salaries that Oregonians receive. So I, too, will have to vote no.
Any Representative Hunt?
I would concur with my colleagues, especially in light of the fact that, as we heard in our testimony, whenever we first heard this bill, that these amounts, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Colonel Caldwell, but these amounts are supplemented by, I believe, what you referred to as federal compensation for those particular days of federal service that these folks engage in each year. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, depends, again, on what status you're in. If you're an active guard reservist, then no, it doesn't. If you're a technician or a state employee, then you're entitled to drill pay that you get for working your weekends or your 15 days of annual training. The only other point I would make in all of this is that the Adjutant General is paid the same amount as the Director of the Liquor Commission with 100 employees.
we've got 8,000. So when you're looking at, if you're looking at what's comparable and what's reasonable and what's, if you just forget about all the different pays and you just look at managing an agency, I don't see how you can justify the same for the Liquor Commission with 75 employees, but that's my own personal opinion.
If I could just follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would agree completely. I think there's no question that the vast majority of states, state employees, with the possible exception of a couple of football coaches, are undercompensated. But I just think, based on the fiscal environment we're in, based on the revenue and restrictions that we're operating under, at least during this legislative session, I just will personally have difficulty supporting this as a particular priority.
Okay, is there any other discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes,
perhaps we should respectfully request that the OLCC Commissioner take a slight cut in pay.
I think that is an excellent idea. And I think all of those retiring on, you know, 10 and 12,000 a month in the PERS system could contribute to. Okay, any other discussion? Okay, I'm going to close. Thank you, Joan Caldwell. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3331 and open a work session on House Bill 2700. Do we have to?
Madam Chair,
how can I look at somebody and call them the wrong name? That really takes brains, right?
Well, I've done it, as you well know.
I just promised not to go into hysterics like I did yesterday.
Madam Chair, I've had several requests for the Dash 7 amendments on this bill, and there are none that I know of.
How about the 8s?
I think you have only the 3s, the 4s, the 5s, and the 6s that are currently in play right now. This is the bill that would direct the Director of Veteran Affairs to create to establish a Veteran Service Officer Expansion Program the way the original bill is written.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, are you ready to entertain a motion?
Well, I'm kind of caught between...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Between both of you. Representative Barnhart was first. Representative Parr, maybe y'all could jointly make it. I hope it's the same one, whatever it is.
Madam Chair, I'd move the Dash 3 amendments to the House Bill 2700.
Representative Barnhart has moved the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2700. Is there any discussion?
Just briefly, if I may.
Okay.
I have to say that I'm very torn about this issue, because I do wish that we could allocate more funds than the Dash 3s allocate, and there are some technical issues as well. But on balance, I think, given the discussion that we've had and the information that the committee's received, the Dash 3s probably get as close as we're going to get to what I think we ought to be doing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Parr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to make the same motion as the good Representative Parr.
Well, you could have made it together.
But may I include, and just to see if the Chair agrees, line 24 on page 1, of the Dash 3 amendments adversely impact other benefits. Could we change other to total benefits or aid that a veteran or the spouse or dependent receives?
Well, that issue, I forgot.
Yeah. Could I explain to y'all that our good administrator has already been called on the carpet this morning by legal, and they've asked us not to make conceptual changes unless we want to start a war here in Capitol.
Would one
got 20 here that would help us.
Do you think a one-word conceptual change would start a war?
I think it would.
All right.
One word has started many wars,
all right,
as a matter of fact.
That's right.
Well, it's like called fire.
One thing we could do, since this is going to Ways and Means, Madam Chair, one thing we could do
is to flag it for them when in the conversation, to point out that there are some language problems in sub D of sub 2 of section 2, and ask them to make certain that before it goes to the floor that that gets fixed.
I'd be happy to follow up on that too. Oh, thank you very much. I try not to give my opinion too often, other than on every bill. I think we have an incredible need to support our county service officers and veterans officers, and have as many as are needed. And this is my biggest worry. And the other worry I have on this bill is that we have a huge discrepancy in what a county service veteran officer is being paid in Multnomah County to another more rural county. I don't like that. I think they're doing the same job, and I think it's, you know, what they do is equally important. I also think we need to think through our accountability and responsibility and get it defined. I don't think that we can just say you are a part of the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs and there not be any well-defined requirements. And I'm not talking about this general federal accreditation. I mean, I could go get it today, I feel. I'm talking about, I think you need to set your ideals high, excellence, determine your certification program, you know, make it unique and make it right, because it is really an area that requires expertise. And I don't want it to be treated like, well, we all got our bachelor's degree. Well, some got it with D's and some, you know, were cum laude. I want us to be cum laude and, you know, graduate the very highest for certification. So I am just going to trust Director Willis and the county veterans, county officers to cure this bill. We know it's not a perfect bill. It is in any way. But my biggest concern right now is if we don't get this down to Ways and Means, we're not even going to get $2 million. Because we have now so many demands. My goal is to keep working until we can come up with five. But right now, is everybody, and that's the reason we went through bills yesterday and today, is to let individuals see there are many calls for money. And the very people that you know, we want to fill these jobs also are the ones wanting us to help the veterans. So it's a really a torn situation. If we're fortunate and we've asked the chairman of the committees, they'll keep digging in their closets and find more money. And I hope this grows to fully fund for, you know, 2 years, not fully fund for just 1 year. And I also think it's a very appropriate place to come back to the emergency board and say, yep, now we need another $2.5 million to make it this next year, because this job is one of the most important jobs in this state. And what's going to be done with this is going to make other states want to come over and, you know, emulate what's done here. And I know with Director Willis at the helm and the excellence of our county officers and the staff you have at the Veterans Affairs, that we can make this work. I do think also that we need to go after more grants for these assistants. You know, I want the county service officers to make adequate and proper income, but I think we need some grants to go after assistance. I mean, there is so much paperwork. I mean, even though you can talk to 4,000 veterans, it's the paperwork that you can't get done. I know that from just being here. And I don't like the word can't, but it actually is a fact in this case. So we need to come up with some ways to access funds for the assistants in the office. I hope there's equity in pay. I hope there are well-defined certification goals and ideals and standards and methods, and to work together. That's what's going to keep this program going. And we really need that to happen and happen today. And if it's okay with you, we'll worry about that word total on line 24 at a much later date after we got our money.
That sounds great, Madam Chair. I agree.
Identified. And I was asked again today, or yesterday evening, by the majority leader in the chair of Ways and Means, Donnie, you got your number yet? So we're working hard to get there. So, but we want to get this in before everybody else gets in. And Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have some concerns based on the testimony we received in terms of the policy implications of the Dash 3s.
Right.
Fundamentally, though, I cannot support the Dash 3s. I actually think we're better off not sending a bill to Ways and Means at the $2 million level. The Senate committee has already forwarded Senate Bill 10, which President Cordy and Speaker Minnis are the prime sponsors of, which set the goal of $5 million. That bill is already in Ways and Means. If our goal, in fact, is $5 million, there's already a placeholder there that has passed unanimously out of the Senate committee on this. My concern is if we send this bill down, we're actually going to be functionally lowering the request. We're going to be working against ourselves in terms of our goal of trying to increase these resources. So I'm not understanding as I think several of us have affirmed at several points. If we think about all the testimony we've received from day one in this committee, consistently we've heard that the dollars for county veteran service officers are some of the best, maybe the best dollars we could invest, not only because it serves directly so many veterans all over the state, but because it leverages so much additional federal money in terms of additional benefits. So I think it's a real mistake for us to send down a bill that has the $2 million level. I think it has the potential effect of dumbing down the request that President Cordy and Speaker Minnis have already sent and has been affirmed unanimously by the committee from the Senate.
Madam Chair.
Thank you for that, Representative Hunt. I want to tell you that $5 million was never a specific number for anything. It was just a number that was just put there. And, in fact, you're looking at the person who said that's what we need, you know, for our county officers, and was told by both sponsors, you know, well, great, Donna, you know, great. That's not a set number. And, however, we'll do everything we can, you know, to move it there. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to do the same thing with this one, is work, both of them. I mean, it's going to end up the same. That one, it will end up, you know, at the same level this one will end up at. But it's like the school money. You start at 5, and then it's 5.2, and the other people are at 5.4. It's no different. And so, anyway, that was me saying, well, that will really help, you know. In our 50, I used the 50 times 50. You've heard me use that many times. Mm-hmm. 50 officers times $50,000. So that was 2.5 a year. That equals 5 million. So I just wanted you to know that I was there on that bill and was the first to speak on it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I am not as familiar with SB 10 as I probably ought to be. But maybe the two of you could tell the committee whether that number was in directly reference to the
expansion program,
veterans service officers, or to something else.
It's the expansion program, and I'm the one that said that expansion needs to be, you know, funding beyond this 2/10 of a county service county veterans officer. You know, needs to include more. So it still is specified as expansion. But we need to move on today, and I'll accept a motion for the Dash Street. I already have, right? Okay. Is there any other? Excuse me.
Well, given what Representative Hunt has indicated, I would like to either withdraw that motion or indicate.
Okay,
that.
Representative Barnhart removes.
She's
does whatever. I mean, what's the word?
Withdraws.
I can't think of it. Withdraws his motion to accept the Dash 3. Representative Farr.
Madam Chair, I would like to make a motion that we accept the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2700.
Representative Farr has moved that we accept the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2700. Is there more discussion? And objections? Would you call the roll, Aaron?
Representative Cox.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
No.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
No.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
No.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. The dash three amendment to House Bill 2700 has been adopted. Representative Farr?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2700, as amended, be referred to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Farr's moved House Joint Memorial.
House Bill 20.
Sorry, I'm reading the wrong file tab. House Bill 2700 with adopted dash three amendment to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any more discussion? Would you call the roll, Aaron?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
No.
Representative Kahn.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 2700 with the dash three attached to it is moved to Ways and Means and with a big step for this committee. At this time, I'm going to adjourn this committee.